Hello, and welcome back to Surgery 101, the podcast brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. I'm Jonathan White. I'm a surgeon here at the lovely Royal Alexander Hospital in Edmonton. This week is the first in a series of two episodes looking at trauma, focusing specifically on shock and bleeding. They're brought to us by medical student Tiffany Paradis, who's visiting from McGill University. In this first episode, we'll be looking at shock, considering what are the different types, how do we assess a patient to know if they are in shock or not, and then how do we treat them, how do we resuscitate them, what sort of fluids do we use. Next week, we'll be looking at the control of bleeding in a bit more detail. So, let's get ready to be plunged deeply into shock, here on Surgery 101.
Hello, my name is Tiffany Paradis. I am a fourth-year medical student from McGill University. Today will be our first episode in a series titled Dealing with Trauma on the Surgery 101 podcast. I would first like to thank Dr. White and the Surgery 101 podcast team for the opportunity to be here. I would also like to thank Dr. Beckett and Dr. Grushka, trauma surgeons from McGill University, for their valuable expertise on the subject and contribution to the podcast. In this short series of podcasts, we are going to look at how to manage a patient who has undergone a trauma. We'll be following the same patient across two episodes. In this episode, we'll look at initial assessment and resuscitation, and in next week's episode, we'll look at the management of hemorrhage. After listening to this podcast, students will be able to list the four main types of shock, describe how hemorrhagic shock is classified, describe the steps to the primary survey, list the three main classes of intravenous fluids, and describe what the deadly triad is. Let's start with a case. You're on call on your trauma rotation, and a call comes in for a 27-year-old male, Mr. B, with blunt abdominal trauma following a motor vehicle collision. First responders state that the patient's car was T-boned on the passenger side. The patient was not ejected from the vehicle, and there was minimal blood loss at the scene. Upon arrival in the trauma bay, the patient has a C-collar in place and is on a spine board. He is tachycardic at 144, hypotensive at 102 over 62, and is saturating well on 1 liter of oxygen through nasal prongs. Hemorrhage is the number one preventable cause of death among trauma patients. Prompt identification and management is crucial in a bleeding patient. Patients who have lost a large proportion of their intravascular volume are at risk for shock. Shock occurs when there is poor blood flow to the tissues, and therefore poor oxygen transfer. There are three main classes of shock: cardiogenic shock, which can result from a heart attack or a cardiac contusion; hypovolemic shock, which can be the result of bleeding, vomiting, diarrhea, pancreatitis; obstructive shock, which can be seen in cardiac tamponade or tension pneumothorax; and distributive shock, which can be seen in sepsis, neurogenic shock, or anaphylaxis. So what type of shock do you think our patient is suffering from? Well, our patient presents following blunt abdominal trauma after a motor vehicle collision. Therefore, it is likely that he is in hypovolemic shock resulting from hemorrhage. Physiological compensatory mechanisms exist to try and maintain intravascular pressure and tissue perfusion. Tachycardia is one of the first physiological signs of hypovolemia, along with constriction of peripheral vessels as a method to preserve cardiac output. Depending on the severity of hypovolemia, patients may have decreased urinary output. The degree of these compensatory mechanisms will depend on the percentage of blood volume lost. According to the Advanced Trauma Life Support, or ATLS manual, there are four main classes of hemorrhagic shock based on clinical presentation. Class 1 is in a patient who has lost approximately 15% of their blood volume, and they tend to present with minimal tachycardia and no changes in blood pressure, pulse pressure, or respiratory rate. Class 2 is considered in 15 to 30% blood volume loss. These patients tend to present with tachycardia between 100 to 120, tachypnea with a respiratory rate of 20 to 24, and decreased pulse pressure. Class 3 is considered when individuals have lost 30 to 40% of their blood volume, And in these patients, they present with hypotension or a drop in pressure greater than 20 to 30. In more severe cases, they can also present with a change in mental status. Therefore, it's important to note that once a patient has lost 30 to 40% of their blood volume, a change in blood pressure will be observed. Class 4 is considered when an individual has lost more than 40% of their blood volume. This results in significant depression in blood pressure and mental status. Systolic blood pressures of less than 90 are commonly observed. Narrow pulse pressures may be present, marked tachycardia of more than 120 beats per minute, minimal urine output or the absence of urine output, and cold, pale skin with decreased capillary refill. Let's go back to the case. In our case, Mr. B is in hypovolemic shock class 3. Our main objective at this stage is adequate resuscitation. As the trauma nurse inserts two 16-gauge IVs and draws blood for a CBC, coagulation factors, Chem7, cross and type, and an arterial blood gas, the trauma team leader asks you to start the primary survey. The primary survey is a sequential method to evaluate a trauma patient to try and identify life-threatening injuries in a systematic fashion. The acronym used to remember the primary survey is ABCDE. A for airway and C color, B for breathing, C for circulation, D for disability, and E for exposure. Although Mr. B is able to tell you his name, he appears quite confused. Due to his altered mental status, it is decided that intubation would be the best method to protect his airway at this point. Following intubation, you auscultate his chest and hear bilateral breath sounds. When examining the patient's circulation, he appears pale, has a weak femoral pulse, and remains hypotensive at 96 systolic. The trauma team leader turns to you and says, "What fluids do you want to give him?" There are three main types of intravenous fluids that we will discuss in this podcast: crystalloids, colloids, and blood products. Crystalloids are considered first line, and they are aqueous solutions containing electrolytes. It's important to note that due to the composition of crystalloids, they remain within the intravascular compartment for approximately 30 to 60 minutes before they redistribute into the interstitial space. Therefore, only 1/3 of the transfused volume will remain within the intravascular space. Normal saline is one type of crystalloid, and it contains sodium and chloride. Hypertonic saline is also another type of crystalloid that is not commonly used in damage control resuscitation. However, it is used in patients presenting with traumatic brain injury as a method to try and reduce intracranial pressure. Ringer's lactate contains sodium, chloride, lactate, potassium, and calcium. It's important to note that after the administration of Ringer's lactate, the lactate is then metabolized into bicarbonate to aid in combating the acidosis associated with trauma. 5% dextrose is another type of crystalloid, and in this case, glucose is rapidly metabolized and the remaining water is redistributed rapidly into the interstitial space. This is commonly mixed with normal saline for maintenance or in patients considered to be at risk of hypoglycemia. Colloids are aqueous solutions with large soluble molecules such as albumin. Colloids result in rapid plasma volume expansion in comparison to crystalloids due to their large size and inability to cross the membrane. They therefore create oncotic pressure to shift and maintain fluids in the intravascular compartment. Colloids are not commonly used in trauma as they contribute to the coagulopathy through dilution. One type of colloid is albumin, which exists in several formats depending on the percentage of albumin within the solution. Hyperoncotic starches are also types of colloids, including dextran and gelatin, but again, these are not commonly used in damage control resuscitation. Blood products is our third class of intravenous fluids that we will discuss. The indication for blood transfusion depends on the clinical circumstances. Of course, crystalloids are rapidly available and will initially be given upon waiting for blood products in a hemorrhagic trauma patient. However, immediate transfusion of PRBCs, plasma, and platelets is important to restore oxygen delivery and clotting ability. PRBCs includes packed red blood cells. The universal donor is Rh negative O blood. It's important to use Rh negative, especially in childbearing aged women, until a type and cross is received. Type and screen can take approximately 15 to 45 minutes. PRBCs can be stored for a total time period of approximately 42 days. Plasma is another type of blood product and includes clotting factors, albumin, and immunoglobulins. This can be frozen, thawed, and used on demand. Once thawed, plasma can only be held for a total of 5 days. Group AB plasma from males is considered to be the universal donor. Platelets is another type of blood products. These can be stored at room temperature under constant agitation and can be stored for up to 5 days. Whole blood is our last class of blood products. This contains all the components of true blood. The universal donor is again O negative, and this can be stored for up to 21 days. Many trauma patients present with what is called the deadly triad, and this includes coagulopathy, as many trauma patients present with increased bleeding time, and this is the result of increased protein C production, endothelial receptor disruption, consumption of fibrinogen, platelet dysfunction, and dilution due to initial fluid resuscitation with non-blood products such as crystalloids. Hypothermia, as a result of reduced blood volume and tissue perfusion, cold resuscitative fluids, and environment. Patients are commonly undressed immediately upon presentation to the trauma bay to inspect for other injuries. Acidosis, as a result of poor tissue perfusion, causes cells to switch from aerobic to anaerobic respiration, therefore increasing lactic acid buildup within the tissues. Therefore, again, the deadly triad in trauma patients is considered to be coagulopathy, hypothermia, and acidosis. Therefore, the excessive use of crystalloids should be avoided in trauma patients, as this contributes to dilution coagulopathy, in addition to hypothermia. Blood products are typically infused at a ratio of 1 to 1 to 1. A prospective clinical trial, called the PROPER trial, identified less injury due to exsanguination after 3 hours of injury in those patients receiving blood products at a ratio of 1 to 1 to 1. This is done as a method to try and reconstitute whole blood and prevent dilution coagulopathy. You've decided to give 1 liter of Ringer's lactate while waiting for blood products to arrive. As 2 16-gauge IVs were inserted, the maximum infusion rate achievable is 220 mLs per minute. The 1 liter of Ringer's lactate takes approximately 5 minutes to infuse, and the patient's systolic blood pressure increases to 105. Thankfully, the blood products have arrived in the trauma bay. Although the patient's blood pressure has responded to the initial bolus, he is still in need of further resuscitation. The trauma team leader orders 3 units of PRBCs, 3 units of plasma, and 3 units of platelets. As bleeding is suspected, the patient is given a single dose of transoxamic acid at 20 mg per kilogram IV. The patient appears to be hemodynamically stable, and you continue your survey. As the patient has been sedated for intubation, his disability assessment is unreliable. Upon exposure, he is found to have bruising over the epigastric region and a seatbelt sign across the abdomen. No other injuries are identified. The trauma team leader quickly covers the patient with warm blankets once exposure is complete. The patient is now hemodynamically stable, but he appears unwell, and the trauma team leader suspects internal bleeding. Okay, that's it for this week. Things are kind of stable, but we still need to stop the bleeding. In next week's episode, we will look at how to identify the source of bleeding and then treat it. Let's just quickly go over some key points of this podcast. There are 4 main types of shock: cardiogenic, hypovolemic, obstructive, and distributive. The classes of shock are categorized based on the percentage of blood loss and changes in vital signs. The first indication of hypovolemic shock is tachycardia. A fall in systolic blood pressure occurs in class 3 when patients have lost a minimum of 30% of their blood volume. Number for the primary survey is A, B, C, D, E: airway, breathing, circulation, disability, and exposure. of intravenous fluids include crystalloids, colloids, and blood products. In trauma, it is recommended to follow a linear progression with minimal crystalloid infusion followed by blood products. Observed in trauma patients includes hypothermia, coagulopathy, and acidosis.
I have to say, this episode was shockingly good. Thanks for covering such an important topic so thoroughly. I'm looking forward to next week's episode on the control of bleeding even more. Don't forget to check out our website, surgery101.org, where you can get access to all of our episodes all the time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week on Surgery 101.